Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Buffalo moms deserved better. That's my take from this weekend. How was your weekend after Montreal putting up 11 against Buffalo's 3 and taking a 2-1 series lead? Welcome
Especially
in.
Especially Mama Duff. She deserved better.
Well, I think Mama Baron and probably Mama Parker as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Owen Parker's in studio from WGR. Great to have you, man. As we go through the weekend that was, but probably more with an emphasis on what's about to come next, which is game 4 tomorrow. But first blush, what are you guys thinking?
I think Montreal played at a 9 and Buffalo played at a 3. That's almost what it felt like. And re-watching and re-looking over my notes this morning, I'm like, it's exactly that. Buffalo comes through with a Tage goal right away. Like, that should be the fuel that you need, right, Owen? And Montreal just were unfazed by it. They almost didn't respect the Sabres and the fact that Tage scored and they took the opportunity after that with some very poor defensive play by Buffalo to have multiple chances after multiple chances. Lyon had to make unbelievable saves after unbelievable saves early. And then they gave up the new goal, under 5 minutes left in the period. But I felt like it was after the Tage goal, it could have been 0-0. And if, Montreal had played that way, it would have been like, man, that was a bad first period. It still was just 1-1.
Yeah, I thought it was a night where everything just piled up on them. They got off to a great start, like I think they all wanted to, and got to their game, but it slipped away too fast. They got really loose in the D zone. I think that was the biggest thing that really came back to bite them. The Suzuki chance early that Lyon makes that great poke check and save on. There were so many moments that it just felt like they were 10% off of what we've seen from them all season long, and that comes back to bite you against a team like Montreal.
That exact moment that you're talking about probably was the foreshadowing that we ended up seeing, right? I mean, because never should he be that alone, and it was fortunate at best that it ended up that way, even after the poke and, just Suzuki being unable to put it over top.
Real estate says location, location, location. Well, Suzuki all alone, Slafkowski all alone.
Right.
Everybody all alone in front of Lyon.
And too much I get prime it. Real
like,
estate.
There was way too much prime real estate. And when you play the Montreal Canadiens and you have Kirby Dach all alone being able to fish it out of the legs of Lyon and put it in, that was a big goal.
He's got to get crushed there.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the only point of that equation right there. Because, I mean, in hindsight, Lyon's going to be upset that it leaked through him and under him. But you need support in that moment.
It was a 2-on-1 right before that. He's scrambling. He's turning. The puck in Montreal comes back fast. And he's like, oh, where did it go? But Kirby Dach is able to go, wait a second. Let me toe drag this one out of your legs and then shoot an empty net. And I'll still have time to celebrate and turn around and give the fist bump.
Right.
Like, wow. Like, at that moment, I was like, this real estate issue here is way, way bad for the Buffalo Sabres.
They were just excited to leave their own end. I think it was they knew that they were playing a fast team. They've known all series long, that this is going to be a very different feeling game that's going to be more wide open. And I think they got caught up in that at times, especially the Suzuki one. You look at everybody, they think they're going to get possession and everybody vacates.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how Suzuki's left all alone in front. And when you're in that situation, you just have to know somebody's got to be responsible here. I think that's something we've seen the Sabres be so effective with. Lindy Ruff has gotten these guys to understand there's a time to jump, and they're great at that. And there's times where you need somebody to be the responsible party. And when you don't get that, you end up getting bit by a team that has so much skill, so much speed. And that really, it just, like I said, it piles up. And when you get a team like that rolling, they can expose you more and more on those chances. Mm-hmm. And it just, you get behind the eight ball and you can't catch up.
But almost 100% of the time, this comes down to execution. And when it fails, then everything you just mentioned, Owen, looks like it's out of position and out of how they normally play. If they make passes tape to tape and their instincts are a little sharper, then we may not be talking about it this way. However, I'm intrigued when you have moments like this to go back and listen to people like Lindy Ruff after game one, which should have felt like, yes, great start, home ice, everything we needed to do. Instead, it was, we weren't very sharp, we need to be a lot better, and then it trickled down through the players as well. And that, too, ended up seemingly being foreshadowing for the next two games that followed. So this is like 2.5 games here, maybe, where they haven't been what they would want to be.
Right. I think that Lindy has done a really good job through this run already of trying to control the narrative and drive the story in a way that benefits his players. And I think that's exactly what he was doing with those comments after game one. Don't get high on your horse here. These guys are good, and they're going to make you hurt if you get too comfortable. I think that's what we've seen these last two games, and that's where I think it's time for Lindy to find his way to get these guys to really dig in, because I think you would have wanted that last night, and they're going to be, you know, burning a fire deep inside to get back in it and try and make sure they can pick up a win in Montreal.
And we'll talk about last night for, you know, a little bit, but I think there's a couple of questions, well, maybe even three questions that come out of last night. One, how do you defend better? That's a big issue right now for the Sabres. Two, it's going to be, well, who's going to be your goalie for game four? Mm-hmm. And three, how do you beat Jakub Dobesh, who was our Lexus leader yesterday and did make some big saves? And if I just focus on that, like, I feel like Buffalo tried to take Dobesh on one-on-one. They come down, they try to beat him, like, you know, with a shot. Sometimes it was from distance. And what did we see in game one? They went around him. They went to the back post. Mm-hmm. Like Benson 2-on-1 to Doan. Like looking like Benson in game two, far
right,
side.
Right, but Benson had it yesterday that could have made it 4-3, and it just bobbled off
it
of him.
Bobbled
and
Dobesh
didn't even make the save. It just literally went out the other
but
side.
But that's the chance they needed. Like yeah, Tage right. on the end wall rebound. Like if you try to take Dobesh on straight on, he's big, he locks on you, and that's very hard to beat. But if you try to go around him, then you have chances. Now, the problem is that when you have a confident team, you can say, hey, pass on that shot and look for the back door. But if your team is lacking in confidence, then making those plays is either going to go really well or really, really bad, because it could have that double-edged sword here that can make you think like, oh, they're second-guessing. Mm-hmm. They're not making the right play. I still think the way to beat Dobesh is to try to go around him. And they had chances like that. They just weren't able to finish early in the third period.
Totally agree. I think Dobesh is a guy that takes so much ice and is so aggressive.
Much.
And he relies so much on the athleticism that he does possess to get himself back into plays. But even the Thompson goal, check out how far out into the white ice Dobesh is on mm-hmm. that. That's what gives him the, like, he doesn't know where to go after it hits the end wall. It gets the weird bounce. And Tage is wide open alone in front. It's a very different looking play if Dobesh is playing a little more in his paint and he's able to track that bounce off the wall. He might be able to get back to his post. That's exactly the kind of thing that he is very easy to expose on.
And when Benson backed him up on the Dahlin power play goal, he didn't feel comfortable.
Right.
See how lost he was. Like, I know there's a screen, but he wants to get up to the top of his crease. Benson is there with a Canadian defenseman. He backs Dobesh up in the crease, and all of a sudden Dahlin shoots with a screen and scores, but he's uncomfortable in
right.
that position. He wants to come out. You got to keep him in the crease, or you got to go around him. That is the way to beat him.
Another interesting approach and or, you know, choice of words and timing from Lindy Ruff was post-game, when one of the first things out of his mouth, five offensive zone penalties. Now, you could take an awful lot from last night's game to lead with. But when you think about the impact that these penalties had, Dahlin late in the first, at yep. the end of the first, that negated their much talked about new power play, right? Like mm-hmm. this wiped it off the board. They were right. only like 40 seconds into it. Yeah. And then they start the period at 4-on-4. Doan, offensive zone penalty, Montreal scores. Malenstein, goaltender interference. That if you flip the script, this town is freaking out about a player running into a goaltender with that velocity. What happens? Montreal scores, and now they're running away with the game.
Yeah.
So this is not just a coach saying offense. These are majorly impactful moments, which is why I think he led with it.
Right. Of course, there are certain games and moments within games that dictate what happens in the end on the scoreboard. And those penalties all were all on the list of, all right, that mattered, that mattered, that mattered. There are penalties that happen that you go, listen, that needed to happen, or maybe that didn't matter. We were able to kill that penalty off, but against a power play unit like Montreal has, there are going to be very few of those opportunities that you feel like, okay, that was worth it.
Especially after the period that Montreal had been amassing. You know, you had survived up until the new hook goal.
Yes.
And then you're given a power play at the end of the first. That is like a gift right there. You've made it this far. You can turn the script here to end the first or start the second. And that's why it felt like, oh, they can't seem to embrace that opportunity that they did have.
Dahlin scores on the power play late in the second. It's 4-2. At that moment, I bet you there's a lot of people in Buffalo that are like, hey, one goal, you're 4-3.
Yeah.
You win it in overtime, maybe. Let's see what happens.
Absolutely.
Alex Tuch takes a high-sticking penalty late in the second, right after that. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not like an undisciplined penalty. It's trying to make a play. He tried to lift Slafkovský's stick. He actually got him on the second try and almost got himself a break, right? But he did catch Slafkovský in the face, high-sticking late in the second. So now we're looking at, okay, well, Tage hadn't scored since game one against Boston. He gets a goal, but I still don't think Tage is playing at the level that, you know, we were accustomed to see Tage. Alex Tuch and that top line doesn't have their swagger, and then Tuch takes that penalty. And even at one point, like, okay, well, you had Greenway and Malenstein in the penalty box. You put Tuch on the PK with McLeod. They got scored right away. Like, the PK struggling to even just have a couple of clears. They're chasing all over the zone. I just feel like there's a lot of the Sabres' identity that has disappeared. So now you're like, okay, how do you regain your identity? You either stay with the same and you say, we're going to feed, you know, Montreal the same look and hope it comes back, or you change a lot of things.
Right.
And that's where you're at right now going into game four. I would potentially look to change the top line because I still don't think that Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský are at their best, but now Caulfield scored and it may be better. So you may have to respond to that top line having a little bit of their swagger back.
Well, that's almost a completely separate animal because the penalty killers, whoever they turn out to be, are going to have to adjust to Hudson and Caulfield and the threat. And that's just two of them. Owen, you already labeled it very clearly just how dynamic and threatening their power play is. Owen Parker from WGR is with us here on Sabres Live today as we kick off the new week. Entertain this for me. If we're talking about change, because we can, let's park the last two games to a certain extent here as the Sabres move forward. If you're going to make changes, like every reaction, you know, every move you make has a reaction. My approach would be...
I thought you were going to go like school.
No,
every reaction
I'm not smart
as
enough.
A counter...
Equal and opposite. No,
he went to Nichols. He did all the science. That's
barely. I went for like half a year.
That's actually what the NHL officiating department jokes about all the time, is the outside noise. They always say, you ask for this, you're going to end up with this, right? Because they know this whole, you know, equal and opposite reaction. Anyway, if I was looking at making changes, I would start by looking at the McLeod line and taking it apart. And then when you do that, it's going to have an impact on all the other lines. So if we played that game, because this has been a long time coming, if you were just focused on production, McLeod has had a real drop off over the last 40 games, regular season and playoffs, from a goal scoring and even to a certain extent from an assist standpoint, because now Quinn, Zucker, both are goalless in 11 games. So let's deconstruct that line, and then Owen, we'll start with you. What do you think the fallout could be, and what would you be excited to try to put together moving into game four?
I think you've got to look to make sure you keep the strength of this team through the playoffs so far, and that has been their forecheck and their speed, right? So you don't want to put together a group that's going to end up slowing you down in any way. So you want to make sure if you're going to move around with Zucker and Quinn and McLeod, okay, McLeod's a speedy player. We want to make sure that if we're going to move this around, maybe stick somebody else that maybe not as blazing speed so that you balance that out on that line. I think that's a little bit of the thought process with Zucker on that line. Mm-hmm. In my mind, you want to make sure you don't lose that balance. So if you're looking at that and you want to get Quinn going, find somebody to get him the puck a little more consistently. Is that a guy you want to pair with Doan and Benson because they're so good retrieving pucks mm-hmm. and finding open players? That could be a really interesting look. And if Quinn's able to find some soft areas, one of these is going to fall eventually. He's missing the net like crazy, but if he dials that in with the release and the shot he's got, I would expect that he's going to find the back of the net at some point. What he needs is a little more help, I think. I think he has been somebody that's transported the puck a lot mm-hmm. very effectively and found his way into good looks. But I think it's almost taking so much of him to get to that spot, he can't quite get the finish that we're used to seeing from him.
Yeah, and Zucker played 647. Lindy Ruff said after the game it's because, well, he's not on the top power play, so sometimes he barely got any power play time, and then he doesn't kill penalties. And then when we get back to our rotation, maybe he's the third guy, and then there's another penalty. I'd be interested to see what his ice time will get back to in game four. So it's funny, Duffer, you mentioned you would start with the McLeod line and say, let's maybe deconstruct it and then see what pieces are moved around. When I did that exercise on my own this morning, the McLeod line ended up being the place where, like, I don't want to see your leftovers ended up too, but that was not my priority. My priority was, how do I get Thompson and Tuck going? Mm-hmm. And look, Peyton Krebs has had a really good run with the top line, but over the last few games here, I'm not noticing Peyton Krebs as much on the forecheck and transition on the rush. So I'm like, okay, who would I want to put with Thompson and Tuck that maybe is going to give him a really nice kick in the rear end? And everybody needs one of those once in a while. So, and the guy that I came up with was Zach Benson, who's played with them before.
Yeah.
So that's where I started. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to move Benson to the Thompson and Tuck line. Okay, so now that means I've got a hole with Norris and Doan. Who could I put with Norris and Doan that maybe will give them a little bit of what Benson was doing, but in a different way? And that, to me, is Zucker. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to put Zucker with Norris and Doan because Zucker can play a little bit net front, down below the goal line, kind of like Benson was. So now I'm like, do I want to put Krebs with McLeod and Quinn? Because I'm going to leave the Carrick, Malenstein, and Greenway line together, even though maybe there would be opportunity to say, hey, you know what? Maybe Greenway needs a night. Like, he had a good game one, but the last two games was average. The penalty kill needs maybe a different player there. So, but then I'm like, does Krebs, McLeod, and Quinn work? And at first I was like, okay, well, that's fine. I can put it that way. And then the Konstal Helenius happy birthday popped into my head. And now I'm like, well, would Helenius have a bigger impact on that line than Krebs? My gut instinct would say maybe. If you roll the dice and you need a hard eight at the Krebs table, maybe that's what it is. But, you know, he hasn't played in a while. He hasn't played in the NHL in a while. So now I'm like, I don't know. But that's how I deconstructed the forward group, starting more about I'll move Benson to the top line and then we'll see what happens after that.
I would be curious, too, what moving Krebs away from that top line would do to the team in the locker room. I would be curious because he's a guy I think that is highly thought of and has been so good for them this season mm-hmm. that if they decide to move away from that, is that a jolt through the locker room and a message sent by Lindy Ruff in and of itself? To sort of, all right, listen, guys, this is not acceptable anymore. We cannot just go with the status quo, and it's going to cost one of your favorite teammates his spot on the top line. And does that inspire a little more, you know, inspired play from some of their top dogs? And does Tage feel like, man, I've been so disappointing. I think I just cost my line mate all season his spot on the top line in the playoffs. I'd be curious what that mentally would do to the team.
Remember
as well.
Tuck said before yesterday's game about how he's like, I got to help Tage. And I think there was already a start to that. Mm-hmm. Listening to some of the players like, hey, it's on me. I need to be better for my teammate. We need to be better for Alex Lyon. Like, there was some of that, but it didn't really yield any results. So maybe, Owen, you're right. Maybe it's like, okay, let's throw the TNT bar into the locker room. and then see what comes out of it.
Yeah, and to that point, I would separate or would definitely consider input from my coaching staff into separating Thompson and Tuck as well, because I don't feel like anything is going particularly well consistently enough for the players that typically spearhead this offense. If you did take Krebs off the first line, I would immediately move him to fourth line center and, again, work your way from that point out, because I think that would be where he's best suited. He's done an incredible job this year. He's overachieved in the eyes of many on the line with Thompson and Tuck, but I would rather see him, if he's moved, go back to a center position, more agitating role, whatever.
Can I play the sarcastic guy here just for a quick second? Are you worried about
Do you need my hat?
Because
usually a title that I
need. Are you concerned about the pregame speech that Marty Saint-Louis would deliver in game four if Buffalo changes all their lines? Because Dobesh said, man, what a pregame speech he gave in game two. And I'll remember maybe for all of the next round. That's how he addressed it. Yes.
Well, as someone who at times is struggled with broken English, I think that's merely where Dobish was having trouble articulating the moment. But
the guy has been around a long time.
16, and, I remember when he came over. He's good. Been around a while.
He's been around a while. So we haven't succinctly answered how the lineup should look tomorrow. Do you think there's going to be what some would perceive as significant/shocking changes?
I think you're almost certainly going to see something happen to the same point I made about Krebs. If nothing else, to show the team, like, we are not okay with this. Mm-hmm. This needs to change. And whether that be up front or on D, I think the third pair last night had their first night where it really felt like they hurt the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Stanley play that led to the Bolduc goal is, and Lindy referenced it in the press conference following the game, and it's just not a play that they want to see made by their D. Their D have been so consistent at making good plays with the puck on their stick, and that is something Lindy continues to reinforce.
Could have had a better back check, too. Would have saved them up a little bit, but you're right.
Right, like, exactly.
That's where it starts.
There's always a chain, right? And the Stanley mistake is the first one in that, and obviously the back check was a major issue. I've got a bigger problem with that than the Stanley play. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about the possible D changes. I don't think Tucker Thompson are coming out of the lineup.
No.
I think Stanley is at risk for that. And I think there's
more than Timmins?
That's where I think I run into a big question. I think the Timmins penalty kill prowess has been well documented and something that Lindy clearly values at a high level. But that penalty kill, as we've mentioned, has been struggling. Mm-hmm. And I think last night on the Slafkovský goal, one of Samuelson or Timmins vacated the net front and allowed Slafkovský to get that chance, right? And to my eye, it looked like Timmins jumped early trying to front the one-timer from Demidov.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a mistake that can cost you. And at this time of year, it can cost you a spot in the lineup. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about both of those players as possibly being replaced. I can't, you know, obviously I don't have a window into the mind of the coaching staff, but that is another thing they're going to be taking a good long hard look at.
Yeah, but with who? Like, I mean, because then is it Metsä? Is it Shen? Is it Kesselring? Like,
I don't think it's going to be Shen in this series against this team. I don't think
it's going to be Metsä, but I would.
And I think it's going to be Kesselring, so we are all on agreement here. So that's good.
I guess.
But Hudson is a problem on the power play because usually your penalty killers are going to have like this box look, and maybe the forwards are going to interchange and slide underneath one another. And the way Montreal plays with Demidov and the one-timer, Caulfield on one side, Suzuki, whatnot, and the high rotation, the Sabres should almost go to a diamond.
Yes.
Where you have one guy in front, you have a forward that's going to protect the one flank, a D is going to protect the other flank, and one guy in the middle. Well, if you want to defend Hudson with one guy in the middle, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Because he's going to make that guy miss. So that's why I think the Sabres have two guys kind of staying up in the top of the zone to protect against Hudson. Something is opening. So what is the poison you want to take? Do you want to give Demidov the 1T? Do you want to give Caulfield the low play? Or do you want to give Slafkovský the front of the net? That's something the Montreal Canadiens have been so good at and Buffalo has not figured out. And it's hard in game four of the second round to say, guys, we're going to a totally different penalty kill because it's not working. So now your hope that your guys are going to have the good read and execute. And in the last two games, it has not gone well for them on that side.
Do Do you know what most people, or at the very least many people, would have expected a talking point to be within the first 24 minutes?
Goalie?
Yeah. Who's starting in goal? So this, all this proves is that it's more complicated than just making one change.
Yeah, I think it's that's only, the they're reality. They're down to one. They're not like down 3-0 on the verge of elimination. Like, you win tomorrow, it's great.
Yes.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we're going to talk about the negatives because there was a lot of negatives, and I'm sure that they're looking at fixing that.
Yeah.
And there's still other questions, but it's not the end of the world. Like, they had a couple of bad games, and you can get back.
So who starts in goal?
I think you got to go back to Lyon. I think that the staff will be tempted to do.
You okay, Marty?
I know. Me and Marty are going to get into a fisticuffs over here.
I'm losing that one.
I just think the way that he's played, really, even last night, how many good saves did he have to make? He was hung out to dry I don't know how many times in that game last night. And to me, the stability that he's provided in the crease through the majority of the rest of his starts is just really, really valuable, and I would be nervous to move away from that to a guy in UPL that I think we all understand has the potential to be a game stealer, series stealer. But do we trust it to be, after being pulled out, he loses all these starts, do we think that that is going to be a challenge for him mentally that he's going to be up to the task of facing? That's where I run into a question, and that's why I think I would lean still towards the Lyon end of things, but I know it is going to be a hotly contested subject. I really would not be stunned either way, and I really wouldn't have problems either way. That's just where I stand on it. I think the stability Lyon's brought has been really important.
Do you want to do like a good TV radio thing where we go to commercial and my answer on the other side of the break, or do you want me to get it started? Get it started, okay. We're all going
to
get
it
started.
I need to hear this.
Okay, exactly. So I am one to believe that, you know, the tandem thing, it works in short spurts, and maybe it works for a year or half a year. I like having a number one. I like having a guy you trust, and you're going to go and win or lose with the whole time. But I think the Sabres have proven this year that's not what they're at. That's not what they have. And in the first round, I thought they were going to go back to Luukkonen in game three because he was their number one down the stretch. And Lindy kept saying, the tandem has worked for us. The rotation has worked for us. Now, last night, he did say, Lyon was great. That's it. So I'm like, he didn't open the door. But I think that, one, Luukkonen would come into game four. And it may sound crazy to say, but it's not a pressured situation. He didn't, like, I think it was more pressure on him game one and game two of the Boston series than now going into game four in Montreal. You're right, Owen. I think Luukkonen has the upside to go in, make a couple of big saves, steal your game, steal your series. But the other side, too, is he did give up a goal from center ice, and it was but basically like put Lyon back in net. So there's that aspect of it. The other aspect of it is Lyon can get on a hot streak. He's shown all season long. You know, longest winning streak on the road and all of that. But after a loss, he's not been able to really, like, recalibrate. Sometimes it's taken him, like, hey, we'll sit you for a week or two before you get back to winning and be back to a streak. Actually, like, I pulled his numbers last night, but after a loss this season, he's 2-7-2. So 2-9 with a save percentage of about .880. So I know yesterday was not on him, but I think that now my instincts would say, let's look to Luukkonen, give him that one game, and see where we go after game four. Maybe he steals your game. He keeps on going. I would go with UPL in game four in Montreal tomorrow. Duffer, it's 1-1. What do you got?
That'll be after the break. I would go with Luukkonen. I also, and it was, again, nothing against Lyon in game two, but I was troubled, perhaps, you know, by what they had all said after game one, and they weren't great or whatever, even in the win. I didn't like the way game two started, and when that second one went in, just as like a lightning bolt, like grab your team's attention right away moment, I was like, I'd put Luukkonen in here. Mm. And it didn't happen, and then clearly we've seen and expected, you know.
I did say 2-7-2, by the way. It's 4-7-2, sorry. Right, little correction.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, we stand for perfection here. We try to.
The door's over there. That left a long time ago, let me tell you. But we can try for it. We can aim for it.
We aim.
Owen, I want the last word from you here in this segment, and thank you so much for being here today.
Of course, thank you.
Like, what's your one thing that you want to see, need to see tomorrow?
I need the Sabres' best players to be their best players.
Yeah.
I think that's the bottom line. The Montreal Canadiens had contributions from their top players last night. They played well. I think the Sabres need the same from Thompson, Tuck, Dahlin. Everybody needs to be just a step better than they've been. I think if they get that, that shows the way everybody else falls into place.
Owen Parker from WGR, Sports Radio 550. Thank you, my friend. Hopefully you'll come back.
Yeah, anytime, fellas. Thank you for having me.
Well,
I appreciate
Duffer's
it.
Duffer's already showed you where the door is, so you know how to come in.
I'll find my way out. I'll find my way out. Thank you, guys.
Of course, our coverage continues here during these Stanley Cup playoffs. Even though the games themselves are not on MSG, they are on WGR, Sports Radio 550. We have wraparound programming starting 30 minutes prior to each game with Buick GMC Game Night. We've got the Lexus post-game show after every game, so make sure you stay with us for that. And we'll continue with Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Don't miss your chance to own a 25-26 game-worn Sabres jersey. You can bid on the black and red jerseys worn this year from some of your favorite players. All proceeds benefit the Sabres Foundation. The auction is open until May 17th at 9 p.m., so place your bids today at sabres.com/auction or scan the QR code on the screen here on MSG as we roll along on Sabres Live on this Monday on the heels of a very difficult weekend for Buffalo. One at home on Friday, one on the road yesterday, and they're outscored significantly 11-3 to fall behind in the series 2-1. I did mention briefly last night in the postgame that the precedent, if you will, for overcoming such adversity in such lopsided fashion would be the 1975 series. Buffalo was up 2-0. They went to Montreal. They got out. They lost 7-0 and then 8-2. Mm-hmm. And then came home, won in overtime, went back to Montreal, won it in 6. So keep that in mind when you're moving forward here, as we do with the rest of the NHL playoffs. Obviously, Buffalo-Montreal game for tomorrow.
We talked lineup, right?
This just in.
Well, we talked lineup, and Jason just suggested, in his way, he'd like to see Benson, Thompson, and Doan together. And that's another way to, like, say, let's reconstruct the lineup, right? Mm-hmm. And he says Zucker, McLeod, and Tuck together. They played together during the regular season, maybe like getting Tuck going with mm-hmm. Zucker, McLeod. Mm-hmm. He would have Quinn and Greenway out, Helenius and Pearson back in. I've heard a lot of and seen a lot of, well, Quinn criticism. I think Jack Quinn is snake bitten. I think he's not finishing. I think he has had glorious chances mm-hmm. and not being able to finish. So I wouldn't pull him out of the lineup. But this Zucker, McLeod, Tuck combination could be interesting
as the first line you mentioned.
Benson, Thompson, Doan.
Right. Because
so it's basically taking Norris out of that line and putting Thompson there.
Here.
Do you have it?
This is what we didn't get to in the first half hour.
What about Norris?
Mm-hmm. Because every single person would agree Benson and Doan, the two best players among the forward group by the Sabres. But nobody talks about Norris. And he's been in the middle of it. So I don't know how to read it. I know Josh expects more from himself offensively, kind of with McLeod. At parts of the final third of the season, it became really difficult for Josh to score, but then he got hot right before the playoffs again.
Scored two before the
end. But he's only got an empty netter in this postseason so far. I love empty netters, as you know. But I just...
And I love Josh Norris.
I don't know where and what's next here for Norris within the configurations. Or you just keep that line untouched because it has been having an impact.
Yeah, but you remember Megan Chyka, Stathletes, on the broadcast? We had when Noah Oslin went in for Norris and then Norris came back in for Oslin. Mm-hmm. We showed the graphic that the line basically had the same impact with Oslin or Norris. Why? Because Benson and Doan mm-hmm. and what they've been able to provide. Could you see a huge jump forward with Tage Thompson on that line?
I don't know.
If it was the regular season, I would say try it now. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? Who knows what that's going to be like. Game four of a series where you're down 2-1, it's a little different mm-hmm. of a timing to get that going. But I agree with Jason.
What about
Helenius,
Norris, and Tuck?
So what we did see in the regular season when Consta Hellenius got called
too small
up
a sample, really.
Was Auslan, Norris, Hellenius, right? They were playing together. So Hellenius playing with Norris, he's played with him and knows. So mm-hmm. could you go Hellenius, Norris, and Tuck? Yes, you could. It's not an easy spot to bring in a young kid in that. But again, like there's some psychology I want you to understand. And I remember being told that as a young kid when I was maybe so anxious and nervous for games, is instead of saying nervous and saying anxious, say you're excited. Mm-hmm. Like I've heard a lot of Sabres saying like, oh, this is an intimidating spot and, you know, in Montreal and whatever. I want you to take all these negative words out of your vocabulary and say mm-hmm. it's an exciting place to play.
Yep.
I've been there in the playoffs. Right, I was there with the Flyers, and the Sabres swept Montreal in '98 in Montreal, Game Four, after you know a great, you know, run to the conference finals. Everything, take those words out and put them with positive words. And I think if you're Consta Hellenius, he'd be excited about getting in back in. He wouldn't be nervous.
Right.
It's house money for him at that moment.
And as we've stressed numerous times, home road record doesn't really matter. Right now, after yesterday, the home team has vaulted ahead with 30 wins this postseason, 29 wins for the road side. And around the NHL last night, it was the home side in Anaheim defeating Vegas to get that series even at 2 before we dive into what's tonight. So really impressive. Vegas played without Stone. They put themselves in a tough spot late, but ultimately, you know, he came within a goal. Can you
Huerdeau scored his first of the playoffs, by the way.
No, not the playoffs. He had gone
his first in forever.
29 games without a goal. Yeah. That's insane.
His reaction was like one of, there's a minute left and we're still down one, but one of like, I can't believe I actually scored. Like, it's been that long.
But it was a huge night for Beckett-Seneca, Cutter Gauthier, Killorn, to a certain extent,
Carlson.
You know. I think Dostal, you know, benefits from obviously the offensive support.
Yeah.
It's been a challenging series there from his standpoint, as was the first round, obviously, against Edmonton. But here they are now 2-2 through four games. So pretty impressive that they are where they are.
Listen, Marner and Eichel are fantastic, and they keep going. Like, Eichel's
Jack's
got 12
assists. Jack's not scoring, though.
He's got 12 assists, yeah. And Marner's scoring and has 10 assists now in the playoffs. They are producing. They're making plays. But they're missing Stone, and Huerdeau not scoring has been an issue. Now it may be that gets going. I'm concerned about, and I love John Tortorella, but I look at the way Vegas is trying to defend, and it is almost like taken away from the offense. Unless you have this great skill set or skating ability, and Marner and Eichel have that, it feels like everybody's standing still in the defensive zone, and then when they try to get going, they're not really producing offensively. And I get it. Torts is very good about the defensive side of the game, but it's handcuffing Vegas a little bit, in my opinion, right now.
Vegas had one great opportunity after pulling within a goal in the final minute last night. It went awry as Dorofeev was denied. Right now in the playoffs, Stankoven, Boldy, and Howden are your goal-scoring leaders, all with 7 goals so far in these playoffs.
Stankoven in 8 games.
Stankoven has done it the most efficiently,
yes.
As has Carolina, for sure. So moving forward, obviously, Carolina's going to sit around and wait after disposing of Philadelphia very, very, very quickly on Carolina. How good are they?
They're really good. And over the last few years, it was like, well, Aho, Svechnikov. And, well, last year they acquired Stankoven, but it was Natchez before that, or Rantanen for a little bit, but it wasn't in the playoffs. And now Stankoven, Blake, Taylor Hall, the most amazing line in all playoffs right now, and the way that their points are. You look at the odds right now. Carolina's gone ahead of Colorado in the odds of winning the Cup. Now, I think if Colorado wins the series against Minnesota, they probably get back to number one. But 8-0 to start the playoffs, 2 sweeps. It hasn't happened since 1985, the Edmonton Oilers. That was Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, Yari Curry, Glenn Anderson, Paul Coffey, Grant Fuhr. That's how good Carolina has been. I'm very impressed. I'm impressed with Freddie Anderson. I think the rest is benefiting Freddie Anderson most out of anybody, because he's always been a guy that plays a little bit more and then he kind of slows down a little bit. And I don't want to hear any, I've been littered with comments on social media about how Carolina, how stupid is the league for the schedule? You know what? They won in four, and they won in four. Exactly. That's what happens. You earned the rest. If they had gone 7-7, that's their fault. So they won in four, and they won in four. You have to play the games when two teams are ready. You got to go. So that's the way it goes. And to me, that's just normal business for the league and their scheduling.
Real quick, one game tonight, Colorado-Minnesota. And, by the way, Blackwood is starting in goal, which is another huge turn of events.
Wow, yes. Did not see that coming. Like, Wedgwood did not have a good game three, but he has been lights out. I'm very surprised. Maybe they just want to give Wedgwood another day off and see maybe for later. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like Buffalo. They've been relying on this tandem, the lumberyard. Funny, my daughter, my youngest one, the U-All daughter that you always love. But we're talking about the Colorado and Wedgwood and Nett and Blackwood and Nett. She goes, what? They have two woods? And I'm like, yeah, they're called the lumberyard. And she's like, that is amazing. Obviously, she's paying more attention in the playoffs. But yeah. I'm surprised with that. Listen, Colorado, they're a good team. They're really good. But Minnesota matched the speed of Colorado in game three. And that was a big cut. Kaprizov, Boldy, Hughes. Man, they were flying. So I think this ends up being 2-2 going back to Colorado for game five.
All right, time for D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
As you can tell, we spent all the show talking about the Sabres, so this is one little effort, but it was a huge effort by Noah Hanifin in the game's final 90 seconds to negate a Cutter Gauthier empty netter. This could not have been played any better by the defenseman, and incredibly, Vegas then went down and scored and had an A-plus chance right after that. This could have been one of the greatest turning point moments in a game in a series, but Vegas was unable to get it tied with Anaheim and proceed to overtime. But full credit to Noah Hanifin, taking one of my favorite things off the board, an empty netter.
Full credit. You got to fight all the way till the end. They were down by two, and that goal would have been the end. They gave themselves a chance. I'll say this. If you were with us in the pregame yesterday, you saw the Matt Barnaby hat trick on Mother's Day and his backhand empty net goal. Yeah. If it had been right there, he would have scored on the backhand. He would have flipped that little saucer backhand right in the net.
Yes, and if you're looking to grab playoff merchandise, you can do so these days from your home. Buffalo Pro Shop is the brand new online store of the Sabres. Visit BuffaloProShop.com to shop exciting team gear and unique styles as we get you set for Game 4, which is tomorrow. Sabres Live continues after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
I figure Tennis Channel, the WTA figure, we should do a good luck toast to you and the Sabres. So I
amazing.
Would you like the beer or the water?
I guess I got to hold it like.
Do you want the beer or the water?
The beer.
I really thought she was going to take the water.
Sabres okay. Nation is not going to be happy if I took the.
No, from Tennis Channel and WTA,
are
you got these
drink it?
Beautiful Sabres beers. Yeah, you got to at least take a sip. It's bad luck otherwise. Oh, well done.
Definitely beer. Confirmed.
You got Italian
beer.
This
is amazing. These things are at the Sabres games, and they're... What, did you just, like, ship these in? Like, when did these...
Well, a gift from Tennis Channel and the WTA.
That's so cool.
They got
I love it.
Saberhood everywhere. I love
they
to see it.
They didn't take ours. They did not take ours. Although, you know what happened after this? She went in her next match and won 6-0, 6-0. It's double bagel. The first time in her career that she beats an opponent, 6-love, 6-love. And now she is in the round of 16 at the WTA Rome. A big event. That's one of the biggest clay events leading up to the French Open in Roland Garros.
Happy birthday, Consta Helenus. He's no longer the AHL's top scoring teenager over the last 2 years. He's
anymore.
A 20-year-old after a point a game season. Yes or no? Will he be in the lineup tomorrow?
I'm going to say yes.
Oh, what a bold prediction by
bold
Marty.
Bold prediction. Well, if it's his birthday, you should give him a birthday present. And that would be the biggest birthday present.
Also a good country to be in at the age of 20. As you
18
know,
is good enough.
In some provinces, but especially Quebec.
18, yes,
exactly. Tuck's birthday yesterday. We'll have another one to talk about tomorrow. By the way, original Sabre and future coach, because Billy Inglis started with the Sabres in 70-71, then he coached the team in 78-79. He's 83 today. He was also an original LA King, so what a cool thing to hold on to, being an original of both clubs.
That's really cool. Big game tomorrow. We'll obviously have all the details tomorrow on Sabres Live.
Thanks again to Owen Parker for joining us today. We'll see you soon.